laporan Doing Business Report 2019 oleh Bank Dunia yang diterbitkan minggu ini, Malaysia telah melonjak dari tempat ke-24 ke tempat ke-15 di peringkat global. Bagi memperkasakan lagi tahap daya saing serta memudahkan lagi urusan perniagaan di Malaysia atau dengan izin Ease of Doing Business, Kementerian Kewangan dan MITI akan menubuhkan satu jawatankuasa yang dipengerusikan bersama oleh kedua-dua menteri untuk memacu agenda reformasi kawasan liar, khususnya dalam penambahbaikan proses perdagangan dan pentadbiran cukai. Kita akan memberikan isyarat kepada dunia bahawa Malaysia adalah mesra pelabur, atau dengan izin, Malaysia is open for business.
Hi, and welcome to Let's Talk, the show that's all about bringing you the most important conversations of the day. I'm Sharad Kutin, and co-hosting with me today is Ibrahim Sani. We're going to be looking at the budget 2019. It was tabled today in Parliament. Of course, it's going to be the subject of much discussion in the media, and I bet in the coffee shops as well. People are going to be asking, are they going to get a bang for their buck, or are we going to lose massive amounts of money through leakages and the kind of naughty stuff that the previous administration was accused of? So that's going to be part of the discussion, I guess, today. And helping us out with some of the numbers, we have Teresa Goh. She's a tax partner with Deloitte Malaysia. And also Jennifer Chang. She is a tax partner with PwC Malaysia. Thank you so much, Jennifer and Teresa, for joining us this evening. Big question, if I could start with that. Who is this budget for? Is it a B40 budget? Is it a M40 budget, a middle-class budget? Or is it for the 1%? Jennifer.
In my personal view, I think it's very much geared towards the B40.
And why? Why would you say that?
I would say that a lot of the announcements today have been very geared towards giving incentives, funds, to the B40, to perhaps, for example, own their own homes, education-wise, to help out the poorer students in terms of providing, cash, books, and all that sort of stuff. So you tend to find that a lot of the things tend to be skewed more towards the B40.
Okay, so the larger picture, it's a B40 budget. Mm. Do you agree, Teresa, this is a B40 budget?
Well, I think it's a budget for everyone. And I say that because we were very apprehensive as to what's going to happen. We all know the problems that we face, that the country faces. And I suppose I say it's for everyone because, like, for the T1 or T10, for example, they are so worried about increase in tax rates, especially personal tax rates. So that didn't happen. No capital gains tax, no inheritance tax at the moment. So it's good for them. For M40, I suppose, in the sense for everyone, in the sense that, well, I'm actually quite surprised how this budget actually has come out. We know that it's a very, very difficult task to actually balance the shortage of revenue as well as, you know, the expenditure, which you really can't cut a lot. But I thought that they've done a great job. And even though our deficit is higher, but they've got, you know, fiscal consolidation plans to bring that down. So okay. it looks bright.
Yeah. Okay. So this is the part where I want to highlight, right? Because there were expectations of some taxes being introduced. Then, when the budget was actually introduced, those like capital gains tax. In fact, before we got into the studio, I was talking about the possibility of even income tax being pushed up. So before we can go any further, we have the Deputy Minister of MITI, Dr. Ong Kia Ming, standing by with us. Dr. Ong, maybe you can share with us some of the ideas that were not included in the budget. In your opinion, what were the things that were missing from the budget?
Hi, thanks very much for inviting me to share my thoughts on this issue. There were a number of items which we promised in the G14 manifesto that were not fully included in this particular budget because of financial challenges. So, for example, we couldn't announce very significant abolishments of tolls, for example, or the requirement not to pay your PTPTN loans until you earn more than 4,000 ringgit. But I'm glad to say that we managed to introduce some elements of this into the budget. For example, promising that there will be no more increases in intra-city tolls for 2019, and also very selective abolishments of tolls for motorcycles, for example, going to Penang. At the same time, we also did announce that we would revamp some of the PTPTN payments so that if you're earning below 4,000 ringgit, you'll be paying less based on certain staggered interest payments. So I think, you know, even though we were not able to fulfill all of our promises, it's a good start that we can see that, you know, within 5 years, we'll be able to fulfill, hopefully, all of our manifesto promises.
There's also the conversation of the things that are being said by the finance minister, Wee Bee Lim Guan Eng, particularly on the subject of samurai bonds, where we now know that the Japanese government has confirmed that the or guaranteed that the samurai bonds will be issued. Could you tell us a little bit more about that?
I think the Prime Minister also reiterated this point in his interview with the press just now, which is that a large portion of this samurai bonds will be used to refinance some of the highest, higher interest rate, you know, yielding, you know, bonds that are about to mature. So this is a good trade-off in the sense that we'll be able to refinance our bonds at a lower rate, you know, with these samurai bonds that have been offered by the Japanese government.
You know, it's interesting, right? Because the Prime Minister is slated to meet with the Japanese officials next week. Do you think that this is in somewhat plays into the conversation of the samurai bonds regarding Tun Mahathir's trip to Japan next week?
I think the Prime Minister did say this is the first tranche. I think he's you know, exploring options to see whether there could be any other opportunities for us to refinance some of the other Malaysian bonds that are maturing. Especially those that need to be refinanced at a lower rate. And I think he's also looking at further exploring opportunities to you know, grow the automotive sector, including this project of this you know, automotive sector that he's always very passionate about. So I think going to Japan will be one of his objectives.
Thank you very much, Dr. Ong Kiam Ming. That was Dr. Ong Kiam Ming, the MP of Serdang, also the Deputy Minister of MITI. So we were talking about the coverage of what is this budget is for, who this budget is for. In fact, we have a nice graphics here trying that we can play, discussing about the three main focus of the budget, where the Finance Minister did speak about institutional reforms, ensuring prosperity, and of course, getting that entrepreneurial culture up. What do you think, Sharad?
Well, I guess with any government, you know, clearly laying out your priorities helps you understand what they're doing and why they have moved the money in particular directions. But I want to come back to Jennifer and Teresa's, you know, assessment of who this budget is for. Partly coming out of, and Teresa, you mentioned this, the concern that this government's fiscal position was such that it was going to be forced to into some sort of austerity mode. Very late in the day, they said no austerity, but there was a long period when they promised no goodies. This was not going to be like successive governments promising everything to everybody.
Yes.
Jennifer, I mean, how do you think they did it? How do they manage it? Was this magic?
Well, I would say that to a certain extent, coming up with a broad-based capital gains tax or even inheritance tax would be rather unpopular. Because the reality is it would hit the M40 group. To a certain extent, even though there's no major tax incentives given, like what Teresa has said, at least there's no increase in further taxes. But I would also say the reason why I think it's more B40 is because if you look at the speech and the announcement, a lot of the funding in terms of getting homes and education and all that tends to be focused on that group. And even with the M40, even though we say there's no increase in taxes, reality is there is a little bit of increase. Like, for example, real property gains tax. In Malaysia, we have a capital gains tax on property. For people like you and I, if we have a property that we've held for more than 5 years, the tax rate would have been zero. But they've increased that to 5% now.
In the event that you sell it.
That's right.
Right.
That's right.
Well, okay. There was this problem, right? And coming into this this new government promised no GST. And a major deficit for the government in terms of revenue. How did they make the numbers work, Teresa?
I think one of the things I see that could help bring in a lot of revenue, apart from the digital tax that we can talk about later as well, is the voluntary disclosure scheme. I kind of like that because, as you know, OECD has this automatic exchange of information, or what we call AEOI, and there are two. It's actually two prong: one for individuals and one for on corporations. So on the individuals is something called CRS, a Common Reporting Standards. So which means that globally, all financial institutions will have to be reporting on the financial accounts of the account holders to their tax authorities, and the tax authorities will then send or remit all this information to the residents, the country where these account holders are resident. Meaning, if you're a Malaysian, you've got a bank account in Switzerland, you've got a bank account in Australia, right? You've got millions stashed there. So in the past, the IRB would not know, yeah, because it's very difficult for them to request for information unless they've got leads. So now they don't have to do that, but all this information will automatically come to them. So from September 2018, they will start receiving all this information. So then the question is, okay, when all this information comes in, then it's a question of, okay, have there been any tax avoiders, evaders, and all that or not, right? So now, with this scheme, that it allows any of these who have forgotten to declare or whatever, now you can go make good, right?
Penalties. Okay, so, but there's still there's a question of whether all this will make up for the deficit. There is a big hole to fill. Yeah, you know, Jennifer, what do you think? Will it?
Well, I mean, I don't know the exact numbers or whether the deficit will be filled, but to a certain extent, there is some broadening of taxes as well, because yes, GST is no longer there, and sales and service tax is there. And as part of the initiative, they have actually also tried to broaden the service tax regime. One of the things is obviously for imported services. Yeah. Right. So if you import services, you will actually have to pay a service tax.
Yeah? You should talk about that. Because talking about digital tax as well.
And also maybe we talk about the fact that I think they're going to be promoting more people going into accounting and perhaps Bumiputras in accounting. I think they're looking at some 3,000 accountants. But we have to take a break now and we'll be back with more. Stay tuned to Let's Talk with me, Sharad Kutan. Welcome back to Let's Talk with me, Sharad Kutan. We're looking at Budget 2019. Lots of things to talk about. We have on the line Cheryl Hamdan. He's with UMNO Youth. He's an EXCO member. Thank you so much, Cheryl, for joining us this evening. Your quick thoughts, because there's a lot of information to digest. What were your main takeaways from the budget?
Hi, Sharad. Thanks for having me on your show. I thought on the thematic score, the budget was pretty underwhelming. I was hoping for a lot more. I thought it was a lot of rehashing and rebranding of existing initiatives, working off institutional memory without adding any real game changes. And I thought Malaysia Baru was about game changes on all levels. On a detail level, what was new and noteworthy were things that were, I thought, quite troubling. You had we seem to be going back to 1990s-style petrodollars funding or financing government expenditure. You've got this great big Petronas special dividend that they're talking about. What they're not telling us is this is necessary because of GST abolishment. You've got reduction in some of the subsidies. You've got BSH to the tune of what's less than what BRIM would have been. So I think on both the thematic and detail score, pretty disappointed.
Okay, I can see why you come from the opposite side of the aisle. I think that might be part of the, you know, the reason why you are disappointed. But what about the fact that the government is, in fact, embarking on institutional reform? Does seem to be pretty different from the kind of rhetoric that we had, at least in the past, during the administration of Najib Razak. There was talk about performance, but they failed miserably. They did, at least in the eyes of the voting public. So do you think the fact they're going to fund the Anti-Corruption Commission more and they're going to be looking at putting together a system of governance, so this money actually gives us bigger bang for our buck?
Sure, but I think it's telling that the most exciting parts were the start and the end. of his 130-minute speech, which was the political element, which I can appreciate. You know, stuff around changing procurement systems, stuff around more operating expenditure for MECC, all the rest of it. Those are good things that I think, you know, is a progression from whatever the previous government would have tabled anyway. Understood on your points around credibility and how, as a new government, they would be seen as someone who's working off a fresh slate. But, you know, what budget is meant to be, as far as I understand it, is how you're going to spend money for the people. What are you going to do for development? And the fact that development expenditure is now down again or remains low at 17% of the entire budget, despite when being in opposition, Pakatan making a lot of noise as to increasing the development expenditure component of the whole budget. These are the real things that affect people's lives. I'm not saying institutional reforms don't, but those are long-term game, you know, long-term reforms and long-term steps that you'd have to do as any government. But what matters in a 12-month horizon, I think they've let us down.
Thank you so much, Cheryl. That was Cheryl Hamdan with UMNO Youth. He's a member of the EXCO. Coming back to our in-studio guest, Teresa Goh with Deloitte Malaysia, as well as Jennifer Chang, who's with PwC Malaysia. And, of course, my co-host, Ibrahim Sani. The finance minister did, Jennifer, say some time ago, it'll take 3 years to put Malaysia back on track. From a tax perspective, from a kind of like a financial accounting perspective, does that make sense? He is himself, I believe, an accountant. What do you make of this horizon? Because budgets are a one-year horizon, not a three-year horizon.
Yeah. So I would think that the three-year horizon is, you know, I think it's quite to be expected.
It's reasonable,
yeah. And you will find that, you know, as mentioned by the previous person on the phone, that there's really not too many goodies in there. It's partly because of the fiscal deficit that the country has. So to a certain extent, you find that a lot of the things that have been actually announced and the tax initiatives as well is really about fine-tuning of the existing system. Yeah, to basically ensure that the government does not get into too much more of a deficit.
Teresa, would you accept that characterization, fine-tuning of the existing system, rather than perhaps game changers that Cheryl, who we spoke to just now, said he found lacking in this budget announcement?
Yeah, I think as I mentioned earlier, it's already surprising when all the goodies, you know, were being announced. I was kind of surprised because there's something for everybody, you know, for the B40, and then you've got for the housewives, and you've got for pensioners, for, you know, ex-prisoners and all that. So there were goodies. And I feel that when he says that he needs 3 years to get back on track, he's actually referring to the fiscal deficit, because the intended or the targeted fiscal deficit for this year was 2.8, right? So now he's pushed that 2.8 to 2021. Yeah, so it's at 3.7 this year and 3.4 next year. And then by the third year, it goes back to 2.8 on track again. Right? So considering the situation that we are in, I thought they've done a very good job.
Yeah, but do you take the kind of political assessment that Cheryl made, that there were no game changers, there wasn't anything in the speech today that we could say was inspirational or, you know, look towards another horizon?
The kickback is that you can't expect an UMNO individual to fully support the budget from the offset unless it's really overwhelmingly good. That's the political element to it, right? But on the flip side, it's very tough to say that this is a budget that doesn't address the key issues. We had the Deputy Miti Minister, Ong Kiam Ming, did say that while they were trying to address most of it, they did get some of it done. But at the same time, I kind of agree with the panelists, because when we say that the budget hits everyone, particularly the B40 community, a lot has been done, from cash payouts to subsidies from smaller cars, smaller motorcycles, from toll abolishments for motorcycles. Those are the kind of things that the budget is addressing, and those are the kind of things that the budget wants. Now, for M40, it's not just what we get, it's not what we didn't get. So for income tax not to be pushed upwards, for capital gains tax not to be introduced, inherent inheritance tax not going to be introduced. Okay. Those are the kind of things that
so
were kind of good.
So we didn't get the bad things. We maybe didn't get much in terms of goodies. So, Santa was a bit stingy this year.
But, that's a good thing for M40.
That maybe, and that's a hard lesson for us to learn. There were things in it that suggested also some policy directions in terms of the environment, for instance. I think the encouragement of setting up a national parks, the federal government would help state governments in doing that because land is a state matter. And I also tax havens. I think Panko was discussed as a tax haven. I mean, what do you make of things like that? Do you think it will generate, the economy? Will it create, an incentive for more tourism when you create, say, Panko, declare Panko a tax haven? Not tax haven, but a
duty-free island. That's what they're trying to get at.
I think he's just trying to promote certain parts of Malaysia for tourism. And I think that's a good thing, trying to encourage tourism in Malaysia. Yeah. And I think what was interesting to note is that they actually talked about the tourism sector as well. And how I think it was quite good that the government actually talked about wanting to put even the certain buildings, certain parks to be under the UNESCO list.
Yeah, like Bangunan Sultan Abdul Samad.
That's right. So I think that's important because it's also the cultural heritage and the buildings that we have in the country, putting them on UNESCO. And the reality is that in terms of tourism, a lot of tourists do look at the UNESCO list and come and visit. So I think that's a step in a good direction.
I want to also ask your opinion, right, particularly on the issue of Khazanah leading the charge for much of this restoration, uplift, facelift, you name it. For instance, Khazanah is going to be in charge of the aerospace hub at Subang, 80 hectares or acres, I don't know. Yeah. There's also the conversation of Khazanah being in charge of the Bangunan Sultan Samad, UNESCO building.
I think Think City, right?
Think City, yeah. So is that, kind of expected for you guys?
Yeah, I mean, for me personally, I would say I think it's good that Khazanah is involved because Khazanah does have their foundation. Where they have the Think City, where they actually try and build up particular cities, whether it's Penang or Kuala Lumpur.
Urban regeneration projects and such.
And they've been doing a pretty good job. I don't know if you realise that we've got the Taman Tugu recently that was launched.
If you could... Were there other things in the budget that interested you as from a positive point of view?
Yes. I think one of the game changers, so-called, I suppose, is the REIT, the airport REIT. So I thought that's a good model because that takes the burden, the financing burden, away from the government, right? And if the airport needs more funds and all that to expand or to remodernize or whatever, then the money can come from the REIT, either raising additional REITs or the REIT getting loan or whatever. So that takes it away. From the government.
The premise of having an airport REIT, I don't think anybody could argue with that. Yeah. I think it's a good model. But I'm not too sure whether or not they can reach that kind of revenue that the government wants, at least the revenue that the finance minister said just now. Do you think that it's...
Are the projections realistic?
Yeah, absolutely.
For a revenue generation?
From the airport REIT, for instance.
Yeah, talking about 30%, right?
Yeah.
Selling off 30% of the investments. Well, KLIA is... an international airport and a very good and well-known one, right? And the returns for the REIT owners are actually from the users, right? The user fee that's going to be collected by MAHB. So I suppose that there must be some basis to those numbers, right? Otherwise, they won't be looking into it. So again, it comes back to investor confidence, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we'll be back and take up more of these issues in the next segment. We're talking about Budget 2019. Our guest, Teresa Goh with Deloitte Malaysia and Jennifer Chang with PwC Malaysia. Of course, with me, Ibrahim Sani. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Let's Talk with me, Sharad Kutin. We're talking about Budget 2019. One of the big items on the Pakatan Harapan manifesto, or rather in it, was the issue of social inclusion. because it's something that's very attractive to voters who feel marginalized or who've not felt the benefits of progress in the country. Now, on the line, we have Sivarajan Arumugam. He's the Secretary General of Parti Socialist Malaysia. Sivarajan, thank you so much for joining us. Big question for you. Did you see funding for social inclusion in this budget?
Social inclusion, I believe that I think there's quite a lot of factors we have looked into how to uplift the B40 group. Of course, we're not too happy with one of the minimum wage, which is only another 50 ringgit increase to 1,100. But besides that, I think the government is also looking at, in terms of indirect, in terms of social wages, whereby they have given some benefits in terms of housing, transport, and so on. Yes.
So overall, you think that they have delivered to some extent on that social inclusion promise?
Yes, I would think so, yeah.
Right, so what else is left for them to do? They say they need at least 3 years to kind of develop some sort of normalcy with the system, the fiscal health of the country. What would you like to see them do in the coming years?
I would think that, basically, when I say just now, the first thing they should have done is that to give a higher minimum wage, because that would have helped, in fact, the B40, the working class. And if something that is the cost of it would be borne by the private sector, actually, and it would not actually come up from the government coffers. And in fact, if they would have set a higher minimum wage, we were expecting at least a minimum wage which was recommended by the National Wage Council, which was 1,250. And if we sort of were able to put more money into the pockets of the people, that would have benefited the government in where that they could have a lot of other expenses would have taken care of in terms of subsidizing costs for the B40. So I think that they should have done, because the next review for the minimum wage is in the next 2 years' time. And so by that time, the cost of products will be increased and so on.
Sivarajan, if I could stop you there. One of the elements that they agreed upon was, for instance, for students with student loans, they allow for now companies to pay off those loans and they give tax exemption for those companies. Do you think strategies like that are healthy?
In terms of paying the student loans, I think one thing we have to also see is that I see the same trend in how they're also handling the housing issues, whereby the cost of education is not addressed, whereby now they're looking at how to finance that particular loan itself. And so in a way, the companies, they are saying that given some incentives, I think it is a good move, but we have to see that how the private sector is going to take this thing on board, whether they'll be willing to do it, whether there'll be any conditions when people are going for employment, whether there'll be any problems that this particular, the freshies who's going to the job market, how they'll be seen. I see the same thing also when they address the housing issue. There are a lot of issues they have come across. They propose $1 billion fund to be parked under several banks and regulated by Bank Negara. But we would address it like they are not addressing the core issue of the housing price itself. Because even though you finance it and you facilitate financing, the burden of the loan is going to go back to the house buyers. So I think the main core issue, the main purpose of the government should be on how to reduce the cost of housing and to make it more affordable. I think that should be the concern, and why we do welcome the other initiatives to finance it.
Right. Thank you so much. That was Sivarajan Arumugam, Secretary General of Parti Socialist Malaysia. His take on the budget that was presented this afternoon, in fact. Teresa, when you look at the way the government approached the question of funding, revenue generation, or the way it was going to deal with shortfalls, for instance, was there something different from previous administrations? There's a different style or approach to dealing with the budget?
I guess so. Instead of just taking the easy way out, I think they have really tried their best so that you don't burden the rakyat with further taxes, especially the M40. So when you look at the taxes that they have introduced, like digital tax, for example, right? It's more like a consumption tax anyway, right? It's in the form of a service tax. So if you consume, then you bear the additional 6%. So if you don't consume, I mean, you have a choice, right, as to whether you need it or not.
So was that, so it's was not that something so that surprised you, Jennifer? Yeah. I mean, the digital tax?
No, I think worldwide, a lot of countries around the world are looking at how to tax some of these internet companies, yeah? And in fact, Singapore is coming up with a digital tax next year, UK in 2 years' time. So I think Malaysia coming up with a digital tax in 2 years' time, I think it's timely, yeah?
Yeah, let's talk about the companies that are going to be involved. Is Alibaba going to be involved? Netflix, are these the kind of companies that we're talking about here?
That's right. These will be the companies. Like, for example, you download a music, right, from Spotify.
Spotify will be
So these type of companies on your iPad, you download some games and all so, that. So that's, how do you tax these people, yeah?
So that is the loaded question, because who uses these apps? It says the M40 and T20. So that means that when we talk about consumption tax, we don't get hit by GST, but we get hit by other forms of consumption tax, like these import taxes on digital tax. Does this mean that this is a pseudo way of the government trying to impose a GST/consumption tax on the middle income?
Not really. I think this is just a different thing, a standalone, in the sense that where digital tax is concerned, like Jennifer said, it's been used by many, many governments, right? It's a unilateral measure to collect something because you just feel that it's not right. You've got all the foreigners selling things, to selling services, selling goods to your Malaysian citizens, and yet they're not paying taxes, you know? So how do you collect? So for tax purposes, it's difficult because you need to have a business presence here in order for the Malaysian authorities to tax them, right? So the debate has been going on for many, many years,
right?
And they haven't found a solution. So everybody's like taking the unilateral decisions as to how you want to do it.
Okay, I'm very interested in this because it is a global conversation and, you know, and finding a solution to, clearly, you do business in the country, but you don't pay any taxes. And is that fair? I think it's just a basic question. The pushback often when it comes to taxes is they say, well, it will inhibit, you know, the small players, the people who are trying to sell things online. How do we do, you know, people who are selling cupcakes, for instance. I mean, are we looking at this kind of measure inhibiting business, the kind of entrepreneurial spirit that the government also says it wants to support?
Right. If there are Malaysians who are doing these businesses, selling the cupcakes, etc., they would be paying Malaysian income tax on their income, whether they sell it physically or online. Yeah. Well, they ought to, right? Yes. They're required to. Yeah. But for the foreign businesses, they don't. And you can't go after them, right? And technically, under the current existing tax law, you can't tax them because they don't have a business presence here. They're just selling the services and goods online to Malaysians.
I guess it's one of the dilemmas of the borderless,
Quick question on operational, right? Yes. Like, for instance, Lazada, they have a domestic operation. Each and every country that they operate in, Lazada.my, Lazada.sg, and so on.
Yes.
So would that mean, would this bring about a possibility of, say, Netflix or Alibaba having a domestic operations to allow for them to operate in a Malaysian setting to avoid digital tax and instead opt for corporate taxes like other businesses here in this country?
At the moment, this digital tax is not really taxed on them. Mm. They're just tasked to register, to collect the tax, to impose the tax, collect the tax, and pay it to our customs. So they're not bearing the tax. They just have a duty to register and collect the tax. So the people who are bearing the tax are actually Malaysian consumers, right? Mm-hmm. So in the longer term, when OECD has figured this out, they're trying to look for a way to tax those foreign companies when they do business here. So until such time, we're just trying to get something.
Well, so we're playing catch-up in many ways.
And I would think that this is actually an easier way of collecting the tax, because so many ideas have been brandished about how do you tax the digital economy, yeah? And some people are saying that, why don't you, when you download something, a game on your iPad, maybe it's the banks that should be deducting the withholding tax, you know? Because you're paying with your credit card. But it gets very, very complex. So I would think that this is a start of taxing the digital economy. And I think your question about whether someone selling cupcakes online in Malaysia will be caught, I don't think so, because in that situation, they're selling products in Malaysia. If they're profitable, they pay taxes in Malaysia. And I think this budget also has given quite a lot of funding to these part of the economy through the venture funds, incentives are given. And I think if you look at some of the government organizations, they've actually been giving grants to this type of businesses as well to promote this area.
Right, okay. Thank you very much. Jennifer Chang with PwC and also Teresa Goh with Deloitte Malaysia, because Ibrahim Sani, we're still talking about the budget and we'll be back shortly. Stay tuned to Let's Talk with me, Sharad Kutan. Welcome back to Let's Talk with me, Sharad Kutan. We're talking about Budget 2019. Teresa Goh, tax partner with Deloitte Malaysia, and Jennifer Chang with PwC Malaysia. Also, Ibrahim Sani, my co-host tonight, we're trying to unpack this thing. In fact, if you notice, we have lots of paper and, well, Teresa's got an iPad. She's in part of the 21st century.
She's clearly, we're a little
more analog. I'm a bit analog. Okay, something that was mentioned in the budget, zero-based budgeting, accrual accounting. Teresa, could you begin by helping us understand what this, what these expressions mean?
Yeah. So when you talk about zero-based budgeting, the zero-base means you budget starting from zero. So instead of incremental budgeting, that means you take last year's and then you just add on a certain percentage, a certain number, right? So what I like about this is that it will help us save a lot and lower our expenditure. So when each of the departments look at their budgets for the next year, so instead of looking at, oh, this is what I have now, right? So I'm just going to increase it and budgets continue to just go up every year, right? But they may not necessarily need that much. Depending on what their ministry or their department is supposed to be doing, they may not need that much. So they should be starting from ground zero, from zero, and based on what you're supposed to achieve, and then you budget based on that. So it can be lower than previous year.
Yeah.
You see? So in that way, it's good, right? Instead of just continuing to pile it on, and sometimes people, you know, and at the end of the year, and then you try to just use up all your budget, yes, so that next year you will get a higher budget and not a lower budget. So that's not very
There would be some pain in crossing between cash accounting to accrual accounting. What kind of challenges or pain that the government has to go through in order for this switch to happen?
Yeah, the government has already been going through the pain and trying to unearth all of this, and they're just very worried that there's a lot more that they have yet to see or they've not seen yet.
We're talking about hidden liabilities.
Yes, that's right.
Hidden liabilities, yeah.
Which we've seen it being, you know, every month there seems to be a new, larger contingent liability going on.
Jennifer, maybe you could help us understand why previous administrations might not have done used this strategy. I mean, what would have inhibited them from doing so?
Well, I guess when you do accrual accounting, obviously you have to accrue for contingencies, like what you've said, liabilities.
You mean you have to acknowledge what is
that
actually, and rather than keep it off the books,
that's
sweeping it under the carpet.
Yeah. So in that sense, you actually reflect a truer picture of your financial position.
Right, so Jennifer, I mean, do you see this, Teresa, do you see this, that there is a truer picture of the state of the Malaysian economy? I mean, it's sort of 6 months after May 9th?
Yes.
And how is it reflected?
I suppose it's reflected in, you know, an actual or truer situation with regard to our deficit and not being, you know, too shy to admit that, look, we will not be able to achieve the 2.8. It's got to be a 3.7 now because this is what we see.
Yeah.
But I suppose the concern is, have we seen everything?
Yeah.
Because there's so many off-balance sheet expenses that they may not have seen, like the guarantees and other stuff, right? That and the leases and all that. So they may not have seen everything. So when you talk about accrual accounting, the minute you incur it, the minute you sign an agreement or a contract, you know that that is a liability. You would have to accrue for it.
Now, having said that, I don't think having a 3.7 or 3.9% deficit is a bad idea because they do provide a projection. It's going to be 3.7% this year, it's going to be 3.4%, and eventually it'll taper off to 2.8%. Those are the kind of things that investors want to see, right? Where there is a truer set of accounting, clearer runway of liabilities that you got to pay, and the projection of what things are going to be looking like, say, 3 or 4 years down the road. Those are the kind of things that, you know, will instill confidence in investors. However, We've seen runoff in the capital markets over the past few months. Foreign investors are pulling, you know, their cash, taking away their money,
but
running
away. But that might be an emerging market problem, right? Just with U.S. interest rates, and it's like a regional problem, not specific to the domestic economy. Right. Maybe nothing to do with our fundamentals, right? But Jennifer, so coming back to the budget, were there things that perhaps concerned you about it? So if you want to put a kind of a lens, a more critical lens on the budget, what would you point to?
Well, I think there were a few items where it left me pondering a little bit. One of which is the real property gains tax. Yeah, I can understand that you want to avoid speculation in the property market in Malaysia. So increasing the real property gains tax for foreigners from 5% to 10%, I think that's okay for even companies. But for Malaysian resident individuals, I think more thought perhaps can be put into, when they increase the rate from 0 to 5%, we don't have the detailed rules, so I don't know what the conditions are. But I think maybe more thought can be put to it in terms of what are the conditions, for example. Yeah, okay. Because other countries, even though they may have a capital gains tax, but they do give exemptions for individuals and the houses they live in. They give discounts, indexation, so that you're not taxed so much on the gains. Yeah. The other item I think which I noticed is that tax losses. Tax losses can be carried forward indefinitely, yeah, by corporates in Malaysia. And it's the same for quite a few countries around the region, Australia, Singapore. Yeah, and the government has decided to limit that to 7 years. Now, the big question is, can the existing companies with tax losses use up the tax losses within 7 years?
Yeah. Right. So you worry this actually might have implications for business.
Yes, yeah. That's right.
Teresa, what about you? I mean, just looking at the things that perhaps worried you a little or concerned you and its implications.
Well, I mean, following up on what Jennifer said about the losses, the reinvestment allowance, ITA and Pioneer, the losses from Pioneer incentive and so on, the effective date, I notice, is year of assessment 2019. So that doesn't give the investors or taxpayers, you know, a lot of time to, you know, try and generate more profits and utilize the losses as a shelter. So that's my concern.
Right.
You know,
so
that
too short
a longer period. Yeah, perhaps a longer runway, you know, so that you give them a little bit more notice. Because it's been forever, right?
That's
since 1967,
right.
That it's been like this. And,
right.
You know, and like we say, investors need the three C's, right? Certainty is one of them, right?
Right.
Yeah. So we're changing tax right now because we on the line right now, we have Wan Saiful Wan Jan of PTPTN. Wan Saiful, thanks for joining us. We want to get your first thoughts on the education aspect of this budget. What was clear is that the Education Ministry got the largest chunk of the budget allocated for this year, on next year's budget. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, firstly, I must admit that I've been completely snowed under with things around PTPTN, and I was not really able to look into the education budget as a whole. But I must admit, I'm really happy that education receives the biggest allocation. That shows that education is receiving, you know, a huge priority from the government. And that is the way forward. We really do need to focus on education, and I think the focus is correct.
Wan, you also, in a press release that just came out, noted that one of your chief concerns is that PTPTN had been turned into a lending organisation. You say you want to restore its original remit that has to do with being an education fund. And how could you help us understand what the distinction is?
Yeah. If you look at the name of PTPTN, it's Perbadanan Tabung Pendidikan Tinggi Nasional, which means it is a savings organization. You know, tabung means to save. But over time, because of the way politics happen in Malaysia, you know, the culture of handouts, the culture of giving out freebies and all this, PTPTN has become, rather than being focused on the saving aspect, the work of PTPTN has been focused more on lending instead. And I think this is the wrong direction for the organization. As a new chairman coming in, I thought, you know, but we really need to bring it back to the original purpose, which is to encourage people to save for the future education of their own children. Bring it back to the original purpose as the name stated, which is to be a savings agency. You know, just think about it. When people ask you about PTPTN, immediately you would think about, I will go to PTPTN when I need an education loan. Nobody at the moment, or a very small number of people, would think of PTPTN when they're thinking about how to save money for the future education of their own children. Right. And I think I want to change that.
Right, okay. There's also this other aspect, as you just mentioned, the question of loans. They seem to have worked out some sort of system where there are some write-offs, there are new strategies to help people actually honour the loans they've taken. Overall, it's going to cost the government something in this strategy. What was the discussion you had, and you mentioned that in your press release, that you had many discussions with government about how to approach this issue. Could you give us a sense of what those conversations, what the trade-offs were?
Yeah, well, if you look at the announcement made by the Minister of Finance, you can see that the direction is changing a little bit. The emphasis is really about encouraging people to save. So, for example, when we talk about saving, at the moment you will get tax deduction. If you save up to 6,000, that has been increased to 8,000. We are also, giving incentive for companies if they help their employees to deal with PTPTN. But basically, the announcements today shows that the government has agreed that we need to change direction. And I'm really happy with people with MOF because we've been having many discussions with them about this need to change the direction, a new way of payment for the loans that people have. All this has been agreed. So, if you ask me about the trade-off, it's not so much about trade-off. It's more about rebranding, like changing the direction so that it goes back to a more sustainable model.
Thank you so much, Wan. That was Wan Saifulwanjan with the National Higher Education Fund, or chairman of Perbadanan Tabung Pendidikan Tinggi Nasional.
Is that what it's called?
Yes, PTPTN is actually the acronym that we all come to know and love. Jennifer, your thoughts on the education dimension of the budget?
Yeah. So I think you've mentioned just now about how the education sector has gotten like a large chunk of the budget. And I think that that is something very good because to a certain extent, what we see sometimes in terms of countries, we are competing with each other. Yeah, we're competing with our neighbours around the region. And what's very important is the quality of our people, the people working in Malaysia, how savvy we are and our language skills and all that. And to a certain extent, we need to upskill the kids to basically be more... have language skills, have
and more
better,
plugged in, right?
More plugged in,
even
yeah.
in that aerospace project they talk about that Khazanah was going to help lead, they did talk about creating the workforce, right? Because it's you can have these great plans, but if you don't have the people to work them, what would you do? Teresa, your thoughts on education in the budget?
Well, I think a lot needs to be done, right? Because we can't always, like 5 years from now or 10 years from now, and still talking about B40 and M40, right? Mm-hmm. And we all know that the only way to move the B40 up to M40 and M40 up to the top 10 or top 20 is basically, you know, through education. But then the thing is, are we doing the right thing, offering the right courses? And, and the people, why are they unemployed? Why do you produce graduates that can't get a good job? You know, so why don't we steer them into, you know, whatever is relevant, especially with Industry 4.0 coming in? Are they equipped with the necessary skills or not? You know, so yeah. I think...
And I think that's the two-tier measure, right? So long game, they got to fix their education. Yeah. The shorter term is improving on allocation to IR 4.0. Mm. TVET, I saw a lot of allocation there. Millions there.
Yeah, that's so vocational education.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. So they're trying to get a quick fix on a very long-term problem, which I think is necessary, but might not be addressing the disease. It might be addressing the symptom, but not necessarily the cause of the problem.
Right, Ibrahim Sani, of course, with three children, I know, so he's very... I'm non-reproductive.
SSPN, so SSPN gets a bigger tax break from 6,000 to 8,000. So I'm really looking forward to that.
Okay, also with me, Jennifer Chang from PwC Malaysia and Teresa Goh with Deloitte Malaysia. We'll be back. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Let's Talk with me, Sharad Kutin. I have Ibrahim Sani who's helping me in today's show because it's all about accountants and accounting. I mean, that's one dimension, at least, of budget 2019. We also have Teresa Goh. She's a tax partner with Deloitte Malaysia. And Jennifer Chang, who is also a tax partner, but with PwC Malaysia. Since we're kind of coming to the end of the show, your kind of final thoughts, Teresa, on the budget. What will you be looking at over the next couple of days? What will you be poring over the details and such?
I think for us as tax agents, we have no choice but to look at all the details and wait for the finance bill and see, you know, the nitty-gritties as to what the announcement actually means, because there are a lot of details in there as well. So, like, one of the things, for example, the voluntary disclosure scheme, for example, there is a catch too. So that reduced penalty is only, you know, if you were to pay up the full amount of tax, you know, by a certain date as well, by the expiry of that period as well, you know. So it's not just, well, get that and then ask for 12 installments, yeah? So right. It's also upon that. So I think in terms of my last words for tonight is that I think the PM mentioned, you know, now is the period for us to recover, and then we have to rebuild before we can re-emerge as the Asian tiger. So I suppose it takes everybody in Malaysia to work together. But now that, you know, we need to have faith in the administration, right, that they will do the right thing. They collect all these taxes, that they will manage it well, and they will manage the expenditure well as well, so that there are no leakages and all that. And then I think people will be happy to pay taxes, and hopefully this time around, this voluntary disclosure scheme will really work, because people will happily volunteer to pay.
You know, it just seemed that people have used this, at least in, you know, in kind of normal conversation or casual conversation, like, you know, they don't want to pay taxes because they believe that the money is going to be siphoned off, or it's going to be misspent, or it's going to go into somebody's pocket, right? So, was there anything in the budget that made you think that this government is putting on, in an institutional sense, not just in terms of, you know, faith in them, but institutionally getting us on track so that the excesses of the past don't happen again?
Yeah. I personally think that it's a very well thought out budget. It does have very targeted actions in terms of the sector as well as the part of the society that it wants to bring up. I think, yes, may not have as many incentives as past budget and some harmonisation of the tax system. But I thought it is a very well thought out budget. But at the end of the day, it's all about the details. Yeah, you can put as much budget as you can in certain areas. But the question is, how do you implement it and what happens?
Yeah, and that's the question that all of us, not just from tax experts, but also legal firms to anywhere from the media practitioners, we're looking at how the implementation is going to happen. If before the budget, people are demanding details, I think the same case is after the budget as well. We still want more details. And I think the government must have gotten a little bit bored by us screaming, where's the details, right? But the devil is in there. So we need to know where the implementation is going to happen, the kind of agencies that are going to be deployed, the kind of cross-intra-ministerial work that is going to happen. Because when we opened this show, we did see the statement by the finance minister saying things like a collaboration between the finance ministry and MITI is going to take place. They're going to create a particular committee to look at Malaysia's competitiveness to the business, those kind of stuff. And everybody wants to know, okay, so what's the position of this committee, the term of reference of this committee, and so on. So those are the kind of things that I think people anywhere will look at the details.
Okay, wonderful.
I think it's up to Malaysians to make it work, right? It's us as well. It's not just a few people.
Yeah, we can just delegate it.
Yeah, it's everybody down the line who's supposed to do what they need to be doing. But I think, like you said, instead of just having faith in them or having faith in God, if you look at the institutional reforms, there are two things, right? The Fiscal Responsibility Act, I like that. And it says it prevents unrestricted expenses, right? So you can't have somebody out there and just spending and spending and incurrence of huge debt. So it prevents that. And the second one is the Government Procurement Act, as you would already know, right? So it regulates the procurement process, open tenders, plug leakages, and so on. So it is there. Yeah. Right?
Wonderful. And I was very impressed with all these reduced budgets on already existing projects, right? So we'll have to bring you back. And especially if this government decides to sneak in a supplementary budget, we're definitely having you back. Thank you so much, Jennifer. Jennifer Chang, who's with PwC Malaysia, and Teresa Goh with Deloitte Malaysia. And of course, my wonderful co-host, Ibrahim Sani. You've been listening to Let's Talk with me, Sharad Kutin, every night at 10 p.m., only on Astro Wani.